Hey guys, welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell. Today, ESPN's Marcel Louis-Jacques joins me to break down Tua Tagovailoa's incredible performance against the Ravens on Sunday, and we preview the two teams that Marcel has covered over the past 3 years for ESPN and knows extremely well, the Dolphins-Bills game coming up in Miami, first place in the AFC East on the line. But before we move on, ESPN and Enscape contributor Dominique Foxworth, who you may have heard on this very show in the past, has a new podcast every Tuesday and Thursday, bringing his unique perspectives on football, the personalities surrounding it, and just about everything else he finds interesting or thinks you might find interesting. So check out the Dominique Foxworth Show. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Now, here's Marcel talking about Tua and the Dolphins-Bills matchup in Week 3. All right, joining me now, here as promised on the Bill Barnwell Show, not just an excellent follow on Twitter, not just an excellent beat writer covering the Miami Dolphins for us at ESPN, but a man who I believe in my heart is going to be in demand among actual NFL teams. Because everywhere he goes, young quarterbacks suddenly break out unexpectedly. It is ESPN's Marcel Louis-Jacques. Marcel, what is it like to have the power of unlocking Josh Allen and Tua Tagovailoa over the course of a little over 2 years in two different places?
Look, if I spoiled a secret and if I revealed my methods, then I'm afraid either I won't get work anymore or somebody else is going to try to do it. And then all of a sudden I'm not so valuable. So it's one of those things where you don't got to understand it, just accept it. And I'm obviously joking. And also I did cover both Taylor Heinicke and Kyle Allen's first career NFL starts in 2018. Neither of which went particularly well. So, there are checks to this system. There are counters to this theory.
Only so much power. You can only do so much, realistically. But you have done a lot. I mean, Josh Allen did take a significant step forward in 2020 and has been much better since. And, I mean, on Sunday, if there was ever a case of a breakout game, that fourth quarter from Tua Tagovailoa was it.
Yeah. In a major way. It was one of those where I essentially had my takeaway ready by middle of the fourth quarter, right? Like I was about ready to write, and our Slack channel is, you know, I got back and read it because I know it's hilarious because I changed it maybe four times over the course of like every single drive. It was like, okay, if they score again, I'm going to say this. Okay, let me do this instead. Okay, actually, I'm going to have to pitch news because it turns out he's got 400 yards and 5 touchdowns. So he might actually throw for 500 yards today. And honestly, I think he maybe would have if Edmonds didn't break off like a 30-yard run there at the end of the game. Mm-hmm. Or it would have put, I think, Tua at like 495 if he threw for every yard on that drive. But yeah, it was one of those like, wow, I am not programmed to believe the Dolphins can win once they are down two scores because that is not what they have shown us over the past 2 years. And, you know, I tweeted maybe in the first quarter when things looked like they're about to get out of hand, like we're going to learn what a Mike McDaniel team, how a Mike McDaniel team responds to adversity today. Mm-hmm. And that is exactly what we saw. They passed it with, I mean, flying colors because look, man, he had to be perfect. He had to be perfect after halftime. And he essentially was. I think it's 320 yards and 5 touchdowns in the second half alone.
Isn't that crazy? Just the sheer numbers. I mean, I wrote in my column on Monday, this is a guy who had never thrown for 300 yards or 3 touchdowns once in a victory. He did that in the second half of this game.
Yeah. Like, even saying it out loud is like, I've gone on record a couple times over the offseason and said, like, I think this works. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that he was going to, I think I specifically said he wasn't going to be have like this Josh Allen type third season because we got to stop expecting that out of third year quarterbacks.
Yep.
But, and particularly because Josh Allen flashed it his second year. If you paid attention, like you got to see it coming, but either way, I digress. But I thought that this was going to work. It's better weapons. It's far better coaching. He's smarter. He's, you know, a couple years removed from that hip injury, which he continues to, sorry to say, like isn't bothering him, but I don't believe him. Mm-hmm. I think it definitely impacted his ability to drive his throws and play this position. So like all things pointed toward him having, at the very least, greater command of an offense than he had in the previous 2 years. And although, you know, I'm not expecting to throw for 400 yards a game or even lead the NFL in passing, like, this was the first time that Tua was ever asked to go win a game with his arm, mm-hmm. and he delivered.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, more than delivered, given how he played. Even, you know, the Dolphins even gave up a field goal. I mean, he had an extra drive to win the game. In terms of his performance, obviously the fourth quarter stuff, hard to poke too many holes in how he played. He was phenomenal. How did he play to your eyes before the fourth quarter? Like, was he playing okay or well, and then he kind of just took it to a new level over those final few drives? Or was he, you know, was he pretty consistently good throughout the entire game?
Yeah, so obviously the two interceptions kind of stand out as poor decisions, and he'll admit that as well. But beyond that, the reason why the Dolphins were in a 21-point hole was because Lamar was literally perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, literally, I think he had a 158.3 passer rating at halftime, if I'm not mistaken. But Tua was 12 of 20, a 150 touchdown, two interceptions. Like, he wasn't bad. Like, he was doing enough. This defense couldn't stop Lamar, and they gave up a touchdown on special teams. Mm-hmm. So like, it wasn't, you know, it's not like he was awful. I thought that beyond the interceptions, he made smart decisions with the ball, and that's kind of what we've seen from him throughout training camp and then also in the Patriots game for the most part. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he wasn't letting it rip like he was in the fourth quarter. Like, they weren't taking the top off the defense like that. But those are the reasons why those two interceptions are the reason why, like, there has to be a little bit of caution. There has to be a little skepticism moving forward, because those are still the things that he needs to clean up. The ball to Hill, a lot of Dolphins fans will tell you that Hill slipped at the top of his route. Mm-hmm. Slip or no slip, the ball was late, and I think it was a little too far inside. Mm-hmm. And Marcus Williams, the Raven safety, read it the entire way. He had Alec Ingold open for a first down right in front of him, and he had Jalen Waddle open on the other side of the field. I think that was his first read, and he just came off it a little too early, a little too quickly. Mm-hmm. Second one shouldn't have been thrown at all. Mm-hmm. I don't think Jalen Waddle was even running that streak down the sideline. I think he was starting to come inside, mm-hmm. as if he's running a deep post, and mm-hmm. Tua threw it to the sideline. Waddle tried to play defense after, and just bad communication from both guys, but he still threw it in a double coverage, mm-hmm. on the sideline. So those are the kind of decisions, like, you like to see your quarterback taking risks and taking chances, but the game is still within reach. You can't be turning the ball over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you know, to be fair to Tua Tagovailoa, it's week two in a new offense. You know, I think he was incredible in the fourth quarter of that game, and it's obviously unrealistic to hold him to that expectation for each and every fourth quarter or each and every week going forward, but this is still a new offense. And so, you know, I guess there's the possibility that even if Tua doesn't have, you know, the sort of crazy fourth quarter he had in week two, in the future, he could still be better on a snap-to-snap basis because he's more comfortable in this offense in week 8 or week 13 as opposed to where he was for most of this game in week 2.
Yeah, I agree. And if you look at his numbers against New England there, mm-hmm. in week 1, 23-33, 270 yards and a touchdown. I think that's more consistent with the floor that we're going to see from Tua moving forward. Mm-hmm. It wasn't spectacular. You know, he wasn't taking the top there. He left some plays on the field. Sure. He got away with the turnover worthy play or two. Mm-hmm. But like, I think that's generally what we're going to see, you know, high 60 to low 70% completion of his passes, maybe a hair under 300 yards, mm-hmm. And a touchdown or two, maybe an interception, depending on the week, depending on the defense. And then there's probably going to be some weeks where he, you know, explodes. Not like this. Like, I would be kind of surprised just because of the rarity of it to have multiple 460 plus yard passing games. But like, he's going to have those weeks where, okay, Tyreek breaks one open, mm-hmm. and Jalen Waddle breaks one open, and mm-hmm. you're going to crack that 300 yard mark and then some. But like, I think he took some heat from, oddly enough, from Dolphins fans, not unanimously, but from some Dolphins fans after that win, in week one, saying that he, you know, he didn't play well. And it's like, no, that's just, he did play well. He just didn't, you know, he didn't let it loose. Like he wasn't Pat Mahomes. He wasn't Aaron Rodgers, but like, that's a stat line that I think we're going to see from Tua. And that is not something to be ashamed of.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. In terms of this offense through 2 weeks, are you surprised with how often they've thrown the football? I mean, I know in week two, they were trailing for most of the game and that was game situation. But if you look at what is the stat, the pass rate over expected, where you take the game script or you take the game situation and then use that to kind of project how often the team would throw the football, Dolphins have one of the highest pass rates over expected in all of football through 2 weeks. So based on what you saw from this offense in the preseason, based on what you heard, based on what you expected heading into week one, did you think they would be a more run heavy offense than they've been through 2 weeks?
Not really. And when you look at McDaniel's offenses in San Francisco, I think the knee jerk reaction is obviously, yeah, okay, they're going to run the ball better. But they didn't particularly run the ball well this summer. Mm-hmm. Their ground game struggled in training camp, struggled in joint practices. It struggled in preseason games, and it struggled in week one. I think Raheem Mostert, you know, getting healthier is helping. I think he was 11 for 51 there in week two. And so there were signs of life. There's certainly signs of life. But I think that Mike McDaniel is a very smart person. Mm-hmm. He's a smart coach. And as a smart coach, he's just going to do whatever works. Mm-hmm. And if passing the ball is a more efficient way to move the ball than running it, I think that I don't think he's going to force the issue. So, I mean, I'm a little surprised to see, you know, 50 pass attempts already. Mm-hmm. But I'm not necessarily surprised that they are pass heavy because they are, you know, they're built to throw the ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, look at their personnel. They have a tight end in Mike Gesicki, who's basically a wide receiver. They used a significant draft haul to go out and get Tyreek Hill, gave Tyreek Hill a big contract. They have Jalen Waddle, who was a really impressive player in year one, a former top 10 pick. I mean, plenty of weapons to go around in the passing game. And then you have like River Craycraft suddenly getting isolated for goal line touches in the passing game and getting a touchdown. So definitely plenty of weapons for Tua to work with.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
I have a difficult question because I feel like this is the sort of question where if I ask it to the wrong person or it's asked in the wrong context, it will go very wrong. It will reveal a very dangerous quote. I trust you. You're a very smart person. This is a question that may require some nuance, which is why I'm asking you to answer it and not me. How much of what happened in the fourth quarter do you pin on Tua Tagovailoa's performance versus the Ravens having some backup cornerbacks and blowing some coverages? What is the mix for you there?
Ooh, yeah, that's fun.
You see what I mean, right?
That is fun. Look, their talent and depth in the secondary and their help in the secondary on Sunday made an impact on what Miami was able to do. Mm-hmm. You know, there was especially those two with Tyreek Hill, in particular, the last one.
Yes.
Armor Davis. Yes. Right. Yes. Because I remember thinking that was his full name. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. For Armor Davis, basically just stood flat footed and watched Tyreek run by him. Like almost like he was defiant in coverage. Like, no, I'm not playing. That was kind of inexplicable, unexcusable. Mm-hmm. The previous one, Kyle Hamilton legitimately didn't know that mm-hmm. Tyreek Hill was where he was until Tyreek was already 3 yards behind him. Mm-hmm. And he bit on, if you look, there's Jalen Waddle crossing, right in front of Hamilton's face. And he started to charge down to take Waddle. That's a rookie safety mindset. You have to get the deep man, and you just have to know where Tyreek Hill is at all times. I don't care what your assignment is. Mm-hmm. Tyreek Hill can end up anywhere. You have to know. So that I would check on, or I would, you know, attribute to, I would attribute to the Ravens secondary, their overall youth. But I mean, Marcus Peters was on the field and playing. Marlon Humphrey was playing. And for the, you know, Tua's, I want to say there's three touchdown passes that were, they were big boy throws. They were big time throws. The touchdown to Mike Gesicki, it was 9 in coverage. He puts it up in the air where only Gesicki can get it. The Craycraft touchdown, spinning away from a sack, throwing across his body, which is not something that he historically does well in the NFL, but he still, you know, was able to throw across his body and get it to him. And then Waddle, the game-winning touchdown, I thought was his best play. I thought it was his best play of the game because he climbs the pocket, but as he's climbing the pocket, he keeps his eyes downfield. He keeps his eyes on Waddle, who hit this little squirrel route to break free in the end zone. And then still, again, across his body, you know, off platform, puts it in a spot where only Waddle is going to come down with it. So it's not like – and he still completed 70% of his passes.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's the right answer. The politically correct answer is it was a mix of both. Mm-hmm. It was a healthy mix of both. But we can't take anything away from Tua Tagovailoa because you still do have to hit those throws. You still have to recognize these. And also, you know, I'm kind of curious, you know, they were blown coverages, sure, but what was Miami's offense doing earlier in the game to maybe set Baltimore up in the fourth quarter to blow a coverage in the first place? You know, that's, I don't feel like that gets discussed enough. You know, Mike McDaniel, again, he's a smart guy, first year coach, but a very smart guy. He's been around the league for almost 20 years. You know, what was he doing to set Baltimore up in a position where they thought they would be doing X in the fourth quarter, and they ended up doing Y, Z, W.
I mean, Waddle had plenty of catches in this game, breaking over the middle of the field, breaking in on digs and posts and slants. And so that matters for Kyle Hamilton. If Kyle Hamilton sees Jalen Waddle just catching pass after pass over the middle of the field, I do think that Kyle Hamilton is more likely to try and address that by jumping that route, breaking over the middle of the field, which then opens up Tyreek Hill to run past Marcus Peters and run free for a long touchdown. Like, that is, the two things are related. Now, I will say, the last touchdown, the long Hill touchdown where Armour Davis appeared to be, have his controller frozen, that was just a blown coverage. I mean, Tua, imagine if you're Jalen Armour Davis. This is your second game in the NFL. Like, your family's watching. You know, it's a big day. You're playing meaningful snaps. You're not really expecting to do that as a fourth round pick on a good team. And even before the snap, the Ravens were showing cover zero. They wanted to drop out into cover two. So Jalen Armour Davis is standing there across from Tyreek Hill. And everyone in the stadium can see it. Tua can see it. Tyreek can see it. You know, if the Ravens play that defense, they're going to throw at Jalen Armour Davis. And they're going to throw to Tyreek, probably on a deep pass because there's no safety help. And so Jalen Armour Davis is expecting to get safety help. He feels like, okay, I know this looks bad, but I'm going to be fine. And then the snap comes, and the safety help doesn't come. And Jalen Armour Davis just
the help never comes.
Just stands there as Tyreek runs past him. This poor guy. I felt so bad for him. Oh man, what a brutal situation.
Like, it did. And like looking at the play, looking at the dots, I think Marcus Williams is lined up over, or Damarion Williams. He's lined up over Jalen Waddle. Marcus Williams is kind of splitting the difference between Waddle and Gesicki, but then Kyle Hamilton is like right on Marcus Williams' hip.
Yep.
And I would assume that, you know, if they're trying to drop back into cover two, that's a lot of ground for that guy to cover.
It sure
and
is.
I don't think he was, it's not like he was particularly blazing fast coming out of Notre Dame. And like, unless I'm wrong, he ran in what, like the 4.6s,
that's
maybe
correct.
Even worse. So that's asking a lot for that guy, for that kid to cover. I'm curious if that was by design, like if he was supposed to be there, or if he's maybe supposed to fill in between like Patrick Queen on the other side. I don't know. It was just a weird, and Tyreek Hill told us after the game, they saw it right away.
Yeah.
That he looked over at Tua and he said, yee-yee. And he's like, that just means throw it to me no matter what. I'm going to make a play for you.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry for blowing up your spot for all future Dolphins opponents that are listening to this. I apologize to Mike McDaniel for now ruining the yee-yee call.
I think politely, if you have Tyreek Hill one-on-one versus a rookie corner and there's no help, I don't think you need to communicate anything. I think the ball's going there one way or another.
Yeah, I think if you're a defender, if you're a secondary and you hear Tyreek yell yee-yee, that you can know it's coming, sure. But he's also very fast.
He is.
He's very fast. So if there's a sliver of open space downfield, I don't think you got the grapes to get there before he does. It was a baffling play. It was like I can't believe they did that so quickly. I can't believe they just tied the game so easily. Like there was no resistance in the fourth quarter from Baltimore.
I mean, I went back and watched it. There was one play where Waddle just dropped a perfect pass and it was almost caught on a pick. That was the one hope the Ravens had, was the Dolphins making a mistake and them lucking into a pick. Otherwise, they had absolutely no resistance. Even on the Edmonds run at the end of the game. I mean, that was an easy 30-yard run in a key situation.
I think it was a beautiful play call from McDaniel there, because you know, they've done nothing really but throw the ball. And especially like in that situation, 2-minute drill, still down by a score, you would expect them to press. You would expect them to keep throwing the ball. Mm-hmm. And they just weren't ready for it at all. They weren't ready for it at all. It was a perfectly timed run. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, they averaged, let's see, this is 233 yards over 20 plays. So that's 10 plus yards per play. Mm-hmm. If I'm not, you know, if I'm correct, and then some, maybe 10 point something. That's just, it's first down every time you run the play.
Yeah,
it was an insane comeback. It was an insane flurry of offense to end the game. It was very fun to watch. You know, objectively, it was very fun to watch all game long. The Ravens were doing, you know, it was just big play after big play. You don't see that many in an NFL game. You rarely do. So it was a very fun game to watch, and an eye-opening experience again for the doubters of Tua. Mm-hmm.
As someone who went on TV and said the Ravens would win the game if they had a halftime lead, I didn't enjoy the fourth quarter as much as some other people, but I respect that it was objectively entertaining, and obviously a really fun game to watch back and kind of figure out what was happening from the Miami and Baltimore perspectives. In terms of that rushing game, we'll talk about Tua a little bit as we finish up with the Dolphins section, but in terms of the running game, what seemed interesting to me is that week one, Chase Edmonds was pretty much the guy for the Dolphins in the running game, even though that was a game where they were winning. And I think maybe heading into the season, I sort of figured, okay, you know, when they need to throw the ball, Edmonds is going to be the lead back. But when they want to run the ball, when they're in run-friendly scripts, it'll be Raheem Mostert. But then week one, they're winning most of the game. Edmonds is the lead back. Week two, even though they're trailing for most of the game, Mostert was the lead back. So what do you make of their running back usage through 2 weeks?
Well, Edmonds was basically the lead guy throughout the summer. So it wasn't really surprising to see him get kind of a lion's share, 12 carries to Mostert's five there in week one. But he was just so, it was a little surprising to see him so inefficient. And he didn't really play much in the preseason. So I guess you kind of can understand it. But it's not like New England's run defense last year was anything better than mediocre. I think that they were middle of the pack, if not lower. Maybe in the early 20s or the late teens in terms of, you know, rushing yards allowed per game. But for the first time, when Mostert carried the ball, it just looked like this offense had some pop to it. And you're starting to see Chase Edmonds is fast. Don't get me wrong, but he's not as fast as Raheem Mostert. And Mostert really didn't participate much in training camp as he continued to rehab that knee. I think we're starting to see him be fully healthy. I think we're seeing somebody who's comfortable in Mike McDaniel's offensive scheme. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think he even showed, you know, kind of surprising amount of physicality and willingness to be physical, not just high, but he is the kind of guy who, if he gets a sliver of space, that he can hit the hole pretty hard. Mm-hmm. So I would expect, you know, we saw an 11-5 split between Mostert and Edmonds there on Sunday. I would kind of expect that to be the case moving forward. Mm-hmm. But, you know, either way, I don't think it's between one of them. You know what I mean? Like, I know at one point, you know, the Dolphins backfield was kind of scary from a fantasy perspective because mm-hmm. there's Sony Michel involved and Miles Gaskin. And Gaskin and Ahmed have each spent a game as a healthy scratch. Mm-hmm. They're just going to ride the hot hand between mm-hmm. Mostert and Edmonds. I think that's kind of what we've seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense. And certainly, you know, there can be opportunities for both of them to have an impact depending on who's hot and what the game situation is. Last question about the offense here before we move on. And again, this is a very open-ended question. Feel free to answer as much or as little of this as you would like. Do you think the impact of what we saw from Tua in the game against the Ravens disappears if he struggles against the Bills next week? And it's kind of just, oh, same old Dolphins. They lost to the Bills. Tua didn't play all that well. Or do you think that Tua was so good at the end of that game in week two that at least a subset of Dolphins fans who were skeptical previously of Tua Tagovailoa are convinced that he can be a different guy than the guy he was his first two seasons?
I don't think the Bills game is going to skew the curve much in the, you know, the negative direction, mm-hmm. Depending, you know, within reason, of course. If he goes, you know, 6 of 35 for 8 yards and 4 interceptions, yeah. Like, you know, there are, he can go out there and lay some kind of egg, but stats are not, I think it might be one of those games where you got to look beyond the numbers and you say, okay, well, how were his processing speeds? What was his decision making? What were his teammates doing? How was his blocking? Because Buffalo's defense is very, very good. And they've looked incredible over the past couple of weeks,
yep.
even with rookies at cornerback, without arguably their best defensive player mm-hmm. in Tre'Davious White. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is, you know, it's an improved pass rush that doesn't necessarily need to blitz to get home. That's kind of dangerous for this Miami offensive line. But also it's that safety duo of Hyde and Poyer that really limits mm-hmm. offenses from doing what they want to do. I think that if he plays a good enough game on film, not just in the box score, like after that, they've got Cincinnati, they've got New York, the Jets, mm-hmm. they've got the Vikings, the Steelers, the Lions, the Bears, the Browns, the Texans, all coming forward. You know, there are a lot of opportunities for him to bounce back and get right, mm-hmm. Regardless of what happens here in Buffalo. But on the flip side, you know, if he does tear it up against the Bills, I think all bets are off for how high his ceiling can be this season. He's a guy, not unlike most quarterbacks and most athletes, he really, really thrives and runs on confidence mm-hmm. and the ability to beat a team that literally knocked you out of the game last year mm-hmm. will probably go a long way for all of them. Not to mention, you know, I think you might even be able to start locking bets for McDaniel Coach of the Year mm-hmm. because we're going to see a level of buy-in. They're bought in already mm-hmm. and it's only been two games. You know, the level of buy-in will never be higher than if you go back-to-back weeks of a 21-point comeback and beating the two-time reigning AFC East champs.
I mean, not to, again, make comparisons between the guy you used to cover and the guy you cover now, but Josh Allen was knocked out by the Patriots in 2019 in a 4-interception performance, a game they lost because Josh Allen was not playing up to the hopes of Bills fans. In a year where they lost the division narrowly, and then next year, Josh Allen was much better, and the Bills won the division comfortably, and it's been kind of their division ever since. So maybe this is Tua's chance to do what Josh Allen did in 2020.
Everything is a simulation, then. It's a simulation. Nothing is real.
Everything that has happened before will happen again, apparently. This is a tough question. Not because it requires nuance, but maybe just because we don't know who's going to be playing for the Bills on defense on Sunday. You mentioned Tre'Davious White being out. He's going to miss next week's game. Dane Jackson left the game on Monday night with a scary neck injury, although thankfully seems to have not suffered a serious injury. He has been released from the hospital. Micah Hyde was carted off. Matt Milano, Jordan Phillips left injured. And Oliver was already out for that game. So I don't know that we know who is actually going to be lining up for the Bills on Sunday. But in terms of who you, I guess, would expect to be on the field or who is likely to be on the field, do you think the Buffalo defense has the horses to keep up with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, given that Tre'Davious White, we know for sure, is not playing against the Dolphins?
That is, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough because it's not the, you know, it's not the deep balls that have ever killed Buffalo. You know, teams don't stretch the field on the Bills because of Poyer and Hyde. Teams get a lot of their, do a lot of their damage underneath after the catch. And that is what the Dolphins at their core specialize in and want to stress. So, you know, Kyir Elam, if he does have to start, he's fast, don't get me wrong. And so I think that that does more good than harm. But especially if Milano can't play, if Dane Jackson's not playing, and particularly, man, if Micah Hyde can't play, then this is a dangerous spot for Buffalo. It's a dangerous spot for Buffalo because, no, I don't think that they'd have the horses. They are the deepest team in the NFL, but that has a limit.
Of course.
That has a limit. And when you're missing this many starters, I really don't care how deep you are. When you play Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle and Mike Gesicki and Raheem Mostert and all these guys who can run after the catch, it stretches and strains your defense way too much. So, yeah, I think for their sake, for Buffalo's sake, you really hope that, you know, some of these guys, particularly or especially really the, you know, the secondary guys in Milano can play, because if not, I don't think Miami's going to have any hesitation, really any trouble in picking the Bills apart across the middle.
I mean, does it feel like, from the Bills' perspective, it's maybe even less about the secondary and just more about, can they just dominate with their pass rush and just, with, like you said, without blitzing, just slow down the Dolphins and Tua Tagovailoa that way?
You can hope so. And again, the Bills have done a great job of applying pressure without blitzing. I believe they have the second lowest blitz rate in the NFL, and I think they have the second most sacks in the NFL. So I think they would hope to do more of the same, but I don't know if they're going to, I don't know if they want to start blitzing Tua in hopes of making him, you know, forcing him into a bad decision, because the quick passing game is going to be such a key part of Miami's offense on Sunday anyways. So if you're blitzing, then you're giving him more holes, more throwing lanes to get into, and, you know, sacrificing that in exchange for hopefully getting pressure on him. I think it's more important. I think the guys who are going to have to be making those tackles after that quick pass comes, I think that's more important for Buffalo on Sunday rather than getting home. Although they have, again, been excellent at doing so this season.
On the flip side, the Dolphins pass rush has not really been there. I mean, granted, they did force a strip sack of Mac Jones and created a defensive touchdown against the Patriots, and that's pretty good. You want to get one of those if you can, but only two sacks, I believe, through 2 weeks. Any reason to be concerned that the defense might not be able to hold up against Josh Allen and an offense that has looked, you know, pretty much unstoppable through two games?
Anytime you play Josh Allen, it's a concern, and particularly for Miami, he's won 7 of 8, and the one that he's lost was a drop pass in the end zone from I think it was Charles Clay. That's a throwback tight end name, especially early in the season. I don't love kind of overreacting to sack numbers. Obviously, you know, two sacks when you're blitzing at the fifth highest rate in the NFL is not ideal. But if you're at least winning your pass rushes, I can kind of overlook that because the sacks will eventually come. The Dolphins are not an elite team per se at pass rush win rate. That is a kind of a mouthful. They're not horrible either. I believe that they're at 46% right now. It's just in the top 10. So I am confident that, you know, eventually things are going to click for them. You know, they're not winning at the rate of the Bills, which they're at 52.8, but they're winning enough that, you know, at some point the rush is going to get home. You've got just too many horses to not pressure a quarterback. You've got Jalen Phillips is going to wake up. Trey Flowers, Melvin Ingram, Christian Wilkins, Emmanuel Ogba, even deaf guy Andrew Van Ginkle and Zach Sealer are adept at rushing the passers. So it's going to come eventually. It's just kind of like it's a exercise in resilience for a front seven.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think even if they have a good plan and even if they have some success, like we saw with the Dolphins and with Tua yesterday, it only takes one play to overcome, you know, a good quarter or a good series or a good possession. You know, if you get sacked and then hit a 60-yard touchdown on the next play, it's great that you got a sack, but it doesn't matter. And I think we've seen both these teams can be that explosive and create those big plays, even if they're stuck in second and long or third and long.
Yeah, and I think it's also it's interesting to note though that the Dolphins are facing the fifth fastest average time to throw in the NFL. So I think offensive are keying on the fact that Miami wants the blitz and that Miami can, you know, provide pressure when given time, and they're getting the ball out quickly. That's something that Mac Jones does well. It's something that Lamar Jackson can do well when called upon. It's something he did with that Rashad Bateman touchdown in the first half on Sunday. And Buffalo, obviously Josh Allen loves to extend a play, but as we saw against the Rams in week one, I think especially this year, he's perfectly fine with getting the ball out quickly and, and taking, you know, chunk gains across the middle or short gains in order to open up something deeper.
Yeah, and I mean, the Bills, they don't have a Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle 1-2 punch, but if Gabriel Davis returns for this game, Stephon Diggs and Gabriel Davis can also do plenty of work after the catch as well in their own right. I mean, you know, again, Hill and Waddle are incredible, but Stephon Diggs and Gabriel Davis aren't bad either when it comes to what they can do with the football in their hands.
No, not at all. There was a time this offseason where, you know, I was, it wasn't even a debate. It wasn't even a discussion. I would take Miami's set of skill players over Buffalo's. And I think I still do. I think I still do because I like Waddle more than I like Gabe Davis. But
for sure,
Gabe Davis did show us in week one that the Chiefs game wasn't a fluke, that he's ready to contribute with additional snaps and additional run. So they're not chopped liver.
No.
In Buffalo, they're not, you know, just a bunch of cast offs anymore. This is a talented group of pass catchers. But it does have shootout potential just because of the strength of Buffalo's offense, the strength of Miami's offense, and the overall health of Buffalo's defense. Mm-hmm.
So would you say heading into this game, do you feel like the Dolphins have a much better chance, or at least a meaningfully better chance of actually winning as opposed to the two games they played against the Bills last season?
I love this. I love a platform to discuss my most controversial opinion in the city of Buffalo, within the city of Buffalo. Those games last year were closer than the final score suggested. And I know how it sounds, because it was 35-0 and then it was what, like 21-9 or something like that. Obviously Tua got hurt in the first game. And I'm not saying Tua playing would have meant they won that game, but it was 14-0 at halftime. Buffalo scored on its first two possessions and then went scoreless until the middle of the third quarter. Miami had the ball in the red zone twice in the second quarter and turned it over both times. Like they were there. It was just Jacoby Brissett and the Yeehaw gang were not enough to move the needle. But they got there. They were there. And then eventually, you know, just no offensive support. I think defense got exhausted, and there's only so much that you can do. And then that game, and I think it was week 8, week 9 in Buffalo, it was like 6-3 at halftime, man. Like they were close.
It was 3-3 at halftime.
3-3. There we go. So it was very close. It was a toss-up either way. You know, being in that press box, there was a lot of surprise, I think. There's a lot of surprise because the Dolphins were still on that massive losing streak. They had just lost to Jacksonville and Atlanta. It looked like the wheels were really about to fall off, especially in the midst of all that Deshaun Watson trade talk. So there was a lot of shock there. But again, no semblance of an offense, no offensive game plan. I think Tua even broke his finger there. Dolphins fumbled deep in the red zone as well in the third quarter. So it was just – it was a comedy of errors, but their defense played Buffalo very well. And that half or the first half of that game, I think, inspired their streak, their run at the end of the season of being the best defense in the league in terms of defensive expected points added. So they play Buffalo actually pretty well over the past year. And even in 2020, if I remember correctly, not the last game, that was an embarrassment for this.
Sure.
But the first one was a shootout between Josh Allen and Ryan Fitzpatrick. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like they've just been getting washed every single time they touch the field. Like, this is a team that can compete with Buffalo. They just didn't have the offense to do so last year, but now they do. Mm-hmm. But now, and that's like, if I'm trying to find reasons why Miami will win the game on Sunday, like, that's where I'm starting from, mm-hmm. is that their defense is fairly confident against Buffalo's offense and plays them fairly well, all things considered. They haven't had the offensive support to actually threaten to win the game, but they've been knocking on the door, all things considered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that game was 17-11 in the fourth quarter, and the Bills got a field goal and then had a pick, and then Bills had a short field for a touchdown, and that ended up being the difference late in that game. But absolutely, I mean, you can make a case the Dolphins were much more competitive, especially in that second game, than it might have looked by the final score. So let me ask you, let's imagine a world where the Dolphins do pull out the victory in week three over the Bills and they get to 3-0. What does that mean for the AFC East? Is that a changing of the guard? Is that a, hey, this is a real competition now? Or is it just, it's week three, we'll worry about what this means in week 10 or 11 if the Dolphins are still there?
I think it's a mix of the latter, in which, like, okay, we'll see what happens. It is just week two. Both teams are going to get healthier. Both teams are going to get better. I would hope for their sake. You know, obviously, don't want to peak in September, but every game really matters, especially in the AFC right now. Every game matters, particularly for a Bills team that's like desperately trying to get home field advantage. Like, they don't want to have to travel to Kansas City again. Like, they want the AFC to run through Buffalo, and this is going to be a major blow to that if they lose that game. Especially because, again, I ran through Miami's schedule before. I'm going to run through it again. Because after the Bills, they're at the Bengals on a short week. The Bengals have struggled this season. They don't look very good right now. It looks like a much more winnable game now than it did in May. They got the Jets at MetLife, home against the Vikings. It's at 1 p.m., though, so Kirk Cousins might be okay. But still, they've got the Vikings. They've got the Steelers. They've got the Lions. They've got the Bears, the Browns, a bye week, then the Texans. They have a chance to really build a nest egg in the AFC and really dig in to the playoff hunt the only way I can describe it is a nightmare December in which they're at the Niners, they're at the Chargers, oof, they're at the Bills, oof, they're home against the Packers on Christmas, oof, and then they start the new year at New England. Like, that's the worst five-game stretch I think I've ever heard of. Mm-hmm. They might falter that. I don't think they're going to go 5-0 through that, although freezing cold takes might get me if I'm wrong here. But I don't think they're going to go 5-0 for that. But there's that stretch in the middle of the season where they can build, again, enough of a nest egg, enough mm-hmm. of a foundation that they can afford to drop a game or two and not worry about it being the difference between them making the playoffs or watching it from home again. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not saying this is not their Super Bowl. This is not, this doesn't even necessarily, I think, change the favorite in the AFC East. Mm-hmm. But in order for Miami to win the AFC East, you have to split with Buffalo. You have to split with Buffalo because they swept the rest of the division last year, too, and look where it got them. You have to be able to split with Buffalo to have a shot. And this puts them on the right track.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is their best chance. Like you said, the schedule's so tough later in the season, and it's traveling to Buffalo versus playing at home. And that's a big difference, especially late in the season. Nobody wants to go play in Buffalo in December. So absolutely. I mean, I think this is in terms of how good they feel right now, the path they want to be on, this feels kind of like a must-win game to me.
Yeah, it's a scary phrase to say, obviously, in week three. Because when we say must win, it's not like this is going to be the difference between making the playoffs and sitting on the couch. But mm-hmm. you have to win one against Buffalo. It's unfortunate for y'all that it comes in week three and we have to call a week three game a must win. Mm-hmm. But again, like we said, this is going to be your best shot at them mm-hmm. with no Trey White, with all the injuries that they've been dealing with. And you're at home where it's going to be swampy. We got mm-hmm. like this, I think there's a tropical storm in the Caribbean that we're going to get residuals from here in Florida over the week. So there's going to be, it's going to be humid. So like, this is your moment. This is your shot. And not to mention, it's a huge benchmark for you because, you know, you compete against Buffalo. I think it puts the rest of the AFC on notice that, all right, hey guys, I know everybody was talking about the Broncos and the Chargers and the Colts entering the season as, you know, non-playoff teams that are going to take that leap this year. But I think the Dolphins are actually the leader of the pack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, through 2 weeks, like, Bills are playing phenomenal football. Dolphins look very good. This is going to be a really exciting game, at the very least, this upcoming Sunday. And if people want to check out your coverage of all things Dolphins, not only on Sunday, but also beyond, where can people do that?
Well, as I always say, you can get my work and my opinions on Twitter at Marcel_LJ. If you just want the content and none of the me, you can just follow. You can follow the Dolphins in a ESPN NFL page. Set up notifications. Going to have news and whatnot coming to you throughout the week. Bills weeks are always fun because obviously I did used to cover the Bills for 2 years. Generally do a lot of radio and podcast appearances. So if you really want to immerse yourself into this weekend's game, I would recommend following me on Twitter because there's going to be a lot of shows and content and whatnot coming out that I'll be reposting and posting. So that's kind of that is it right there. That's the gauntlet right there.
Okay. One final question, Marcel. As someone who made his way around, I feel like I'm saying this like it's an insult. It's not an insult. You ate a lot of good food in Buffalo. You went to a lot of good places in Buffalo. A lot of Bills fans probably coming to Miami for this game. Marcel, where would you send Bills fans to eat if you had to pick one place in Miami for them to eat this upcoming Sunday, this weekend heading into this game?
That is tough because if you want wings, I'm going to be honest. I haven't found it yet. I haven't found it yet here. I'm going to cheat and I'm going to give two answers. One is my personal favorite. It's like this little hole in the wall between my building and Wynwood. It's called Kush. It's like right on the corner. I wish I knew the street names, but I don't. It's like right next to the train tracks. It doesn't look like much from outside. They got an incredible spicy chicken sandwich. The key is you got to ask them to give it to you fried and not grilled. They'll do it. Get that. Get the black bean dip as well. You're in for a fun night. They got great craft beer selection too. It's small, so come into it expecting that, but it's my personal favorite. And then if you want to support your own, go to Latrelia Barbecue out in Miami Lakes. It's kind of a drive for the people who are like staying out in the action or staying in the action, like South Beach or downtown or Brickell. But it's Isaiah McKenzie's barbecue restaurant. Another great chicken sandwich. I would get it more often if I didn't live 45 minutes away. But great brisket as well. It's got some Texas flavor, a little bit of South Florida flavor to it as well. It is something that it's worth the hype, especially if supporting a player on your favorite team matters to you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Marcel, it's always a pleasure. We have a lot to talk about here. Happy we got to break down Tua's performance and this Dolphins Bills game. Excited to have you back on later in the year, the next time Tua Tagovailoa throws for 4 touchdown passes in a single quarter.
Absolutely, man. Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on, and looking forward to Sunday.
All right. Thanks so much to my friend Marcel Louis-Jacques. Does excellent work covering the NFL, covering the Dolphins for us at ESPN. Strongly recommended Twitter follow. Very funny, very smart on Twitter. We have more NFL coming next week here on the Bill Barnwell Show, of course. The NFL action keeps coming each and every week. We will have more breakdowns. We'll have more analysis, more guests, all that good stuff coming up in the weeks to come. So hope you guys are enjoying the first 2 weeks of the season. If you had a lot of Trey Lance in fantasy football like I did, my condolences. Hope Trey Lance gets well soon after his serious ankle injury. But more will happen, and we'll cover it all here on the Bill Barnwell Show. Thanks so much for listening.